Welcome to the Capital Connection, a weekly program questioning New York State leaders on a variety of issues. Your host is Dr. Alan Chartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Distribution for the Capital Connection is made possible with the help of New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm Alan Chartok. Joining us this week is columnist and Albany Bureau Chief for the New York Daily News and our favorite reporter, Ken Lovett. Welcome back, Ken.
Good to be back.
Let's jump directly to one of the more interesting things that's going on in Albany now, and that's the Moreland Act Commission. Fill us in.
Well, it's getting ugly is what it is.
Yippee.
The Moreland Commission had sent out subpoenas to a whole host of law firms that employ legislators, the other businesses that employ legislators, seeking all this information, everything from pay information to employees to client information. And last week, the legislature struck back. They filed a very scathing legal brief to not only quash the subpoenas, but to have a judge actually stop the commission, saying that it doesn't have the right to investigate the legislature. Don't forget, this commission was created by Governor Cuomo. Governor Cuomo struck back this week after my...
Well, one second. Let me just interrupt and say that Eric Schneiderman, of course, which you know, and have written about it many times, the attorney general, wanted to get around this business about the Moreland Act Commission could only do the executive, and he deputized everybody as assistant attorney general so that they could investigate the legislature.
It was like a power boost.
Yes.
It was the Moreland Commission on steroids.
Right.
So I had an item in my column on Monday in the Daily News that basically had people saying that the majority of legislators who received requests for information are complying. Now, how much they're complying, we don't know, whether they just turned over, you know, a little bit or a lot of information. But the governor used that to pounce on Monday. He held a conference call with reporters, and he ripped into the legislature, and he said the fact that so many individual legislators are complying, even if it's a little bit, would shoot down the arguments of the legislative leaders who say this is about separation of powers, that it's a different branch of government. They have no right to do this. And the governor's argument back was, well, if this is about separation of powers, then why are some people complying?
You know, Ken Lovett, there's a whole question of right and wrong. We all know that there's a certain cesspool part of the Albany experience in which people pay to play. There's no question about it. And that includes everybody. We have a governor who's collected $29 or $30 million in his accounts. And we have legislators. And we know that when somebody gives a legislator some money, no question about it, they're doing it because they want something back for it. There are a few who do it for good, but mostly it's sort of greed. So people could sort of decide, who's right in this, Andrew, Cuomo, or the legislative leaders? Well, we know Cuomo's right because he wants to put a little light on things.
Yes and no. I would argue it could be both ways. It's almost like when we argue about, you know, the Ku Klux Klan. Most people, the majority of people, are not going to argue in favor of what the Klan stands for, but it goes back to the old, you know, expression that, you know, I may disagree with you, but you have a right to say what you say. In this case, I don't think many people are rushing to the defense of the legislature because of all the problems, all the corruption we've seen over the years. However, if the governor is exceeding his powers, if the governor is using the threat of investigation to force them into passing ethics reform legislation, then maybe that is over the line. And should we accept that, even if it's for the right reasons? You know, look, if the president said to Congress, I am going to have you investigated by the FBI, by whoever, unless you pass this legislation, I don't think people would necessarily sit back and say, oh, okay, that's good because Congress is corrupt.
Yeah.
I think it's a similar situation here. At least that's what the lawmakers are arguing.
Well, that's an interesting point. I think most people, but this is only my projection, would say the governor's right for opening the shutters and letting people take a look into this sausage factory and what's going into the meat. But I want to say something else, Ken. Sooner or later, goes to the Court of Appeals, the highest court here. I was at an affair the other day where it was being presided over by the chief judge. I believe I saw you there, myself, and the chief judge was there. The chief judge has just been basically forced out because Andrew Cuomo would not support a constitutional amendment, which I approved of, by the way, saying you could stay on after you were 70 years old. In fact, that reaches, as you've written, almost every person on the court. Now, along comes the legislature, says, this mean old governor...
Yeah, I mean, the judges are not happy with the governor right now. Look, the reality is what I think the governor is banking on, especially going into an election year, is sort of what you just said, in the sense that he knows the public is going to be on his side on the issue of the legislature. He also knows that for the most part, other than the insiders, nobody is paying attention to this fight. So what he wants is results. And I think ultimately he's willing to take some of the shots of, oh, you're overreaching and this, that have been printed, because he knows that's not going to really stick on him that much, because most of the public is going to say, hey, go ahead, you know, go after these guys. We support that.
But Ken Lovett, does he really? And here's the question.
Does he want the
Ethics reform, or does he want the issue, as we say in politics?
That's been a question people have raised. Did the commission overreach intentionally? Because then the governor could run around and say, I tried, we put together a commission, and these guys still fought it. They went to court to fight it. What are they hiding? And certainly it is a good issue going into an election year. And the governor more or less said that on Monday when he did that press conference, the conference call with the reporters. He said, those who are complying have nothing to hide, and they don't want to basically be tarred going into an election year. Now, those who aren't complying took that to mean, well, maybe some of those people who are giving up the information, you know, they're afraid, they're being bullied into it because they don't want this to become an issue in the election.
Yes, but does the Moreland Act Commission, and you're the expert on this one, take orders from the governor?
There is a healthy interaction, shall I say. Certainly, yes, they had taken orders from the governor's office in terms of what subpoenas to send out. And I think what's so frustrating to the legislature is, as you said, the governor has raised $28 million. There's been questions about how he's used some of the money from the state party, how the state party raised all this money and then used it on ads to support his agenda. Yet it does not appear that the Moreland Commission is looking into the governor or any of his interests. And that's very frustrating to the lawmakers. They say this is all about going after the legislature. This is all about really browbeating them into submission to pass legislation.
So let's go to another grand topic, Chris Christie of New Jersey and Rob Astorino, the very popular Republican county executive of Westchester County, a Democratic county, who wins re-election big time. And Chris Christie gets together the new head of the Governors Association, by the way, and has something to say to Astorino.
Yeah, he was very encouraging to Astorino. He said, you know, if you are going to run, you know, Astorino picked his brain. Because let's not forget, Christie won in a very Democratic state. Astorino just won in a heavily re-election in a heavily Democratic county, but he's never run statewide. Astorino was picking his brain. What do I do? How do I go about this? You know, the wives were there, and they talked about the impact of a statewide race on the family and how you can use the family within a campaign. But as head of the RGA, the Republican Governors Association, Christie sits on a lot of money, you know, tens of millions of dollars that they will dole out to Republican gubernatorial candidates next year. There's, I think, 36 gubernatorial elections. There was no commitment made. I mean, let's face it, New York is a blue state. The polls right now show that Cuomo is
trounces
any Republican. He's up 40, I think, in one poll against Astorino. Astorino's never raised money for a statewide race.
But nobody knows who Astorino is.
Nobody knows who he is.
Just like nobody knew who an obscure politician, George Pataki.
But that was a different situation, too,
yes,
because you had a three-term governor that people were very tired of. Right now, at least according to the polls, Cuomo's not as popular as he was a year ago, but he's certainly not hurting. His favorabilities are over 60, according to the polls, and his reelect numbers are okay. They're not great, but they're okay. But Christie made no commitments. He didn't say, I'm going to give you money. He didn't say, I'll come in and campaign for you. What he said was, take the next few months, hone your message, build up support within the party, see how much money you can raise, and then we'll talk.
Well, the accounts I read in the newspapers were a little different from what you just reported to us. Some of the reports had Christie wildly enthusiastic about encouraging Astorino to run. You don't think that's accurate?
That's not how I had heard it. I spoke to three people very close to Astorino, and all three said he was encouraging is in terms of you should look at exploring a run. This is what you should do. But there was no, I will be on board with you 100% if you do it. And certainly the issue was raised with Governor Cuomo on Monday. And Cuomo said Christie called him and said that was not true. I did not say I was wildly on board.
So somebody got it wrong, I think. Well, Well, anyway, the governor, who's in his 50s, was just elected among the senior folks, those of us who are over, 50. And I didn't make the list as one of the sexiest men in the country.
Sexiest man alive, I think.
Sexiest man alive. Yeah. Well, what do you make of that?
the governor had a funny response. He said, I think New York is sexy, and as governor, that's how they got to me. There are other 55-year-olds. The governor's 55 who didn't make the list. People like Alec Baldwin, Prince, whole host of people that you would think might have made the list. Look, I don't know. He made the list. I'm sure he's very happy. I'm sure he's going to brag about it at dinner on Thanksgiving with his brother Chris Cuomo, the CNN anchor. They have a nice competitive relationship. But what I make of it, I have no idea. I don't know how the list is compared.
Yeah. There are times you see things in news magazines and others, some obscure college somewhere that nobody ever heard of being known as named the number one liberal arts college in America, something like that.
I guess power is the ultimate aphrodisiac.
I guess it is. Does he, Cuomo, from what we know, play well with others? I want to go back to this Chris Christie thing. Is there anybody that we could point to that shows that Cuomo plays well with other politicians? States, in other words, the governor of Connecticut, the governor of New Jersey, the governor of Maryland.
He's not a big fan of the governor of Connecticut.
No.
They've had run-ins.
Yeah, they have.
Which actually led to one of the greatest lines, and probably the defining line of the first term of Cuomo, when one of Cuomo's top aides, who's no longer there, Steve Cohen, his chief of staff at the time, said to an aide to the governor of Connecticut, Dan Malloy, "We run a two-speed speeds here. Get along and kill."
I have always loved it.
And I think most of it.
I've used it in about 10 columns myself. I mean, I think if anything came close to telling what this was all about, that was it.
But he and Christie actually do have a good working relationship. They share some interest in that they both control the Port Authority.
And the bridges and
the tunnels in New York. And they have had a good working relationship. When they had to ask the federal government for the Sandy aid following Hurricane Sandy, they got along well. They've had dinner together, so I don't think.
I wonder what they ate.
Now this may change, mind you, because if Christie is running for president and the governor is thinking about running for president, you'll start seeing more and more shots at each other, veiled and otherwise, and more overt. But right now they seem to be getting along for the most part.
Right. I saw that Shelley Silver the other day issued a comment. He is such a bright man, saying with all the animus that is obviously going on, that Cuomo was one of the best governors he'd ever seen, something like that, some incredible laudatory statement. Why do you do that?
Well, I think several reasons. One, Cuomo's the head of his party. Two, Shelley Silver isn't exactly on firm standing these days and knows that even if he's popular, but even if he's strong in his conference, the governor could make life very uneasy for him.
Yeah, so he's trying to buy him off a little.
I think you have not seen Silver go after the governor, and even in this fight over Moreland, it's been a very professional argument coming out of the assembly, and they've actually been.
Do you think Andrew Cuomo sees anything that doesn't go his way as professional?
I think Andrew Cuomo, I think another governor said spoiling for a fight. I don't think Andrew Cuomo necessarily backs off a fight.
Now, Andrew Cuomo appointed a tax commission to lower taxes in New York. Who's not for lowering taxes? And who did he put on that commission, among others, but George Pataki, the guy who beat his father?
Yeah.
And into all of this comes the new mayor of New York, de Blasio, who says, soak the rich and put the kids in pre-K. Obviously, Pataki's coming out, the Republican, and saying, predictably, lower the personal income tax. Let's parse that one.
Yeah, I think it wasn't a surprise. When they put the committee together, I had spoken to people close to Pataki because Governor had said at the time, Governor Cuomo had said at the time, I want them to focus on lowering taxes like the property tax and the estate tax and other taxes like that. He didn't necessarily focus on the PIT. And those close to Pataki said, well,
PIT is personal income tax.
And those close to Pataki told me at the time, this was last month, that, Governor Pataki is going to focus as well on the personal income tax, including on the wealthy. So it's no surprise. I think they had.
No surprise that a Republican would be.
Right. And I think they had a tacit agreement that Pataki would serve on this if he can do something like that. That doesn't mean, of course, the governor is going to accept the recommendation. And certainly the governor made it clear on Monday that that's not something he's looking to do. He said, we already have dealt with the personal income tax in the past year. I don't see going back at it.
So let's bring Bill de Blasio into this, the new mayor of New York City. Obviously, you know, he is very much for raising some of the taxes on the very richest New Yorkers and paying for education.
He had a little bit of an embarrassing moment on Monday as well, where he was giving a speech and he was, you know, doubling down on wanting to raise the income tax on the wealthy to pay for pre-K. And he was praising his former boss, David Dinkins, the former mayor of New York City. And Dinkins got up and basically said, I don't think we should raise the taxes on the wealthy. You should look at it a different way, maybe on the commuters. So that was kind of an embarrassment. But I think de Blasio is going to push it hard. I think he has support in the Assembly with the Assembly Democratic majority. I think he has support with the Senate Democrats. And even Jeff Klein, the head of the breakaway Democrats who helps control the chamber with the Republicans.
The group sometimes called the traitors.
He has said that he would push de Blasio's plan. Cuomo in an election year, I don't think he's going to want to raise taxes, even if it's in New York City. I personally think they'll come to an agreement where pre-K is funded like de Blasio wants, but Cuomo will be able to run around and say he stopped the tax hike. So it'll be a win-win for both.
Sounds right. Sounds right. I'm fascinated by the Dinkins thing. Dinkins, of course, is not regarded as the great success story of all times. Got beat by Giuliani. And now Dinkins gets up in de Blasio's face, who now has the office that he once had but didn't hold on to, and gives him a hard time about taxes. What's that all about?
It was odd, considering, you know, the two are supposedly close. And, you know, this came after he was praising Dinkins. And, you know, Dinkins, of course, was surrounded by reporters after those comments. And he said, I'm not saying I'm against the raising the tax, you know, taxes on the wealthy. I just think there's enough people who don't want to do it that they should look at other ways. But it was a very strange situation, and it certainly put de Blasio in an odd position.
Now, the crime statistics in New York City are very encouraging. Things have gone down. We do know there was this major fight over stop and frisk. Some of the newspapers have been saying, okay, now you can't stop and frisk. The crime rate is going to go up again. And of course, sitting in the middle of this is the police commissioner, the existing police commissioner, Ray Kelly, who has been roundly criticized by the incoming mayor. How do you throw out a commissioner who has basically wiped out crime within an area?
This is going to be an extremely sensitive issue for de Blasio, and a lot of people think it will be a defining issue for de Blasio, who he picks for police commissioner. Bill Bratton, the former police commissioner under Rudy Giuliani.
Who Giuliani didn't like because we're here, because he got too many headlines himself.
Right, but who really started the decline in crime in New York City to record levels, really. His name has been mentioned. You know, there are a lot of people who believe that de Blasio is focused on so many social issues, including stop and frisk and you know, of course, the pre-K stuff. But if crime goes up, you know, at all or dramatically in the next 4 years, it could make him a one-term mayor now, to a lot of people, because that's going to be an issue.
Your newspaper editorial board, the Daily News, has been very strict about this crime business.
You know, with lower crime comes more business, comes more money generated that can go to school, that can go to pre-K. You know, people forget what New York City was like, you know, prior to Giuliani, and it wasn't very good. And people have a sense of security now. So the issue of stop and frisk, you know, for people who aren't involved in that issue, they look at it and say, you know, they're not as concerned right now because crime is low. But if crime starts to tick up, you'll see people are upset. If the petty crimes that really Giuliani started cracking down on, the squeegee men and such, come back, if, you know, if there's homeless all over the city again, I think that's how de Blasio ultimately is going to be graded.
Now, de Blasio gets elected. He has a coalition, obviously. People of color, others, you know, all sort of backed.
A really broad coalition.
Yeah, broad coalition backed de Blasio. I think people were ready to say goodbye to Bloomberg in the same way they were ready to say goodbye to Mario all those years ago. Enough is enough. And they all projected, as we political scientists say, their own values into the incoming mayor. Are there opposing factions that have supported him that he's going to have trouble reconciling. Not an exactly wonderful question, but you,
well, I think there's traditional Democratic, the teachers unions are really going to have to make amends. They actually went and endorsed Bill Thompson in the Democratic primary, and surprise, surprise, Mike Mulgrew, the president of the teachers union, is not on his transition committee. Which was a noticeable omission. I think, you know, business is leery. But I think to a lot of people, as liberal or progressive, whatever word you want to use, as de Blasio is, they feel that he's a political operative, you know, at heart, that he's a pragmatist and that he won't go as far left as people fear. And where the real thing to watch is the city council, which has gotten extremely liberal. And now with Chris Quinn leaving as speaker, whoever becomes speaker, this could really lurch the city to the left.
The public advocate
as well. Yeah. But certainly the city council is where a lot of people, if you talk to business leaders, they feel, you know, we can work with de Blasio, at least at this point, but they're really afraid of the city council.
So let me ask you a question. It's a flattering question, and you'll probably react badly to it. But you are, all of a sudden, out of nowhere, like Lochinvar coming out of the West, you now have the reputation in Albany as the go-to guy, the guy who breaks the stories and all the rest. How do you wear that fame? I mean, is it a good feeling? Do you reject it? It does seem like you're the king of the hill right now.
Honestly, I don't look at it that way at all. I think there's a lot of good reporters. I think, you know, I work hard. I always used to joke, but I think it's real that I'm confidently insecure, confident in my abilities, insecure anyone will notice.
is there, I mean, how do people in the press corps get along? I think everybody wants to know that. Do you guys, you people, get along with each other, or would you cut each other's throats given the chance?
No, I think, you know, it's a real interesting scenario because I think overall people get along really well. And yet you're in a highly competitive environment. But, you know, the people you beat on a story or who beat you on a story, you know, oftentimes you're out having a drink with at the end of the day. So I think as a press corps, it is kind of a close-knit unit, but a very competitive one.
Are there any dangers?
Like a sibling rivalry, I guess.
Ken Lord, are there any dangers in the press corps being social with each other? In other words, we sometimes get into this concept of the feeding frenzy or, you know, everybody, you know, following the leader. Is there a possibility of a problem there?
I don't think that there is a danger in that regard. You can argue there would be a danger of getting close to sources. There's, you know, that's more, I think, I don't think there's anyone there that I can think of that wouldn't go with a story that they got, that wouldn't want to break a story, that, you know, there's a lot of good, talented reporters there who I think, actually the talent at the Legislative Correspondents Association is really among the highest right now that it's been in my 20 years there.
Interesting. So our guest has been the wonderful Ken Lovett of the New York Daily News, a fabulous repository of information about New York and what's going on here. Ken, thanks so much for joining us.
Always fun.
And thank you to David Gustina, the producer of this program. We'll see you all next week.
Capital Connection is distributed with the cooperation of the public radio stations of New York State. David Gustina is the producer of The Capital Connection, a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio in Albany. Support for The Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.